Good evening, everyone. It's a well, actually, this is our last talk of the month because next week will we be on retreat, most of us. So this is the last one of the month. An ending, but also a beginning. Which I, in the past 24 hours, have experienced quite extremely, let's say. I learned yesterday that I received a WhatsApp message from a fellow poet, and I learned that one of my poetry mentors, the woman who really woke up my poetry path 25 years ago, died. She died on Monday, and her name was Alice Notley. She was one of the greatest living American poets, no longer living now, but and she lived in Paris, very much a reclusive. She didn't go out much, and she was really kind of hard to manage to see her, and I hadn't seen her for a while. And so she died. And I was surprised at how shaken I was about hearing this news. And I then the first thing I did, I was out having lunch at the time, and when I came home, I sat down and I tried to think, what do I do, and I had really just talked about her like last week when I was in the United States with my sister, and had decided that I was going to contact her, and even thought on Monday. I had decided I would contact her when I returned from the US, but then last week when I returned, I had too much stuff to do. So I didn't contact her. But on Monday, I thought, oh, I have to do it. I really have to reach out to her and see if we can meet for a coffee. Well, she died on Monday. Of course, I didn't know that until yesterday morning, but and so there was this great feeling of regret that I hadn't done it. And grief and loss, everything that comes with when someone close dies. And so I immediately my reflex was to reach out to the people who knew her with me in the 25 years ago in the writing group that I was in that she led, and some of whom, I mean, I've stayed in touch more or less, but we haven't seen each other for a long time. And so I sent messages to the people who I knew were also connected with her in one way or another. And I even said in the email, I'm stunned to learn hear this news, and I'm feeling the loss, and I wanted to share that with these people, other people who are were close with her. And I didn't really think much about that way that I phrased it about sharing it with these people. But that was actually what I was doing. I wanted to share this emotion and this feeling with others who I was assuming were feeling the same emotion, but it just came down to just with others who had a connection with her. I sent off the emails, and then I had to go take care of my grandson in the afternoon. So I go to the other end of existence, right? This burgeoning growth of a baby. And while I was there taking care of him, my daughter called me and her voice sounded kind of weird. And I said, well, are you okay? And she said, no, my dad just called and my grandfather just died. So my ex-father-in-law, my ex-husband's father, and my daughter's grandfather. Suddenly, this is like a double whammy. Okay. However, I wasn't so close with him anymore. I hadn't seen him probably for 20 years. And because I've been divorced for 30 some years, I had no real contact with him. But I still did from the 10 years that I knew him well and connection I had with him and how important he was for my daughter in her life. It was her grandfather. And she called me because for the same reason, she wanted to share that feeling, that emotion, that grief. And I received it not in the same way that I had received when my dear poetry mentor, teacher died, but as someone I could feel my daughter's pain, I could feel the grief and the loss, and we talked, and that was the reason she called, was to share it. So then I went through my day and my evening, and then this morning I wake up and on WhatsApp we have this fabulous message from Joanna, whose baby was born yesterday. Another extraordinary other end of life experience, right? And we have it's very easy for us to naturally celebrate expansion, growth, birth, beginnings. Easy to rejoice. It's harder to welcome the contractions, life contracting and ending, right? So it can be failure, depression, grief. It's harder to welcome that, but it's equally as vital. The two are equally as vital. And the reflex to share it is the same. That's what I was astounded by this morning when, Joanna posted that message and then just bing, 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 bing. Whether it was a heart, whether it was a little word, just, the sharing just went on. Had it been the same, had someone shared something about a death or a loss, it would have been the same on that group because that's we share, we have this reflex to share with each other. That's part of our practice. The emojis would have been different. If someone had put something about a death, it might have been hearts, but meaning something different, And this really struck me that as the day went on yesterday, it became more and more clear to me that that was such a key thing that I wrote to these people in that email was I wanted to share this with other people. Yesterday, nobody responded to me. Or maybe they did. Yes, they did. Throughout the evening, the people who I'd written to did respond. And that made the sharing even more palpable. They received my, I threw this message out into the ether, the internet ether, and something came back. They shared in return what they were feeling. What they knew, there were very few details about this woman's death, but and there was something just so warm in that, and so it was as if by sharing it, then I'm no longer isolated. I'm no longer isolated with my feeling. I'm reminded that I'm not the only person in the universe who is feeling this or who has felt this. Same with the joy. The birth of a child is just a great occasion for joy. And of course, when it's you giving birth or it's in your family with the birth, or it's different than if it's someone else, but it's, Joanna, it's our family. So it's like someone in our family has given birth, and that we're not the only ones feeling this, right? We reach out. We're released from our isolation. How can I say? It like shifts the experience of the emotion. So it sh when I reached out to the people yesterday, it shifted my experience of this emotion of the grief and the loss I was experiencing. And it connected me with all of life. It also helped me, curiously, it helped me let go of the regret that I was feeling I was feeling so much regret that I hadn't contacted this woman, that I had let it go so long. Because basically, since COVID, things were complicated. She was sickly. She was a super reclusive person anyway. She had cancer. She had two knee replacements. It was like all kinds of stuff. But that's not an excuse. And I felt regret. But by sharing it, sharing the grief, it's as if the emotions could be freed. It was like we make this vow to we chant every day. Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Well, actually, I think it should be free them. One of these days, we're actually going to make it free them. But so we can see these beings as all the different parts of ourselves, all the different aspects of ourselves, and we free them by acknowledging them. So I could free my regret by acknowledging the regret. I could allow it to be and not like add on grief to the regret. I'm such a, I shouldn't be regretting, or it's becomes, I become identified with the regret and it's like it's freed. And it was almost like sharing with these other people. Okay, I hadn't reached out to Alice for a long time. Okay. In the end, it doesn't really change anything. I'm still feeling this regret. I mean, I'm still feeling this grief and this loss, which is a very human emotion. And this is, we feel this way because we're human and because there's love. We have this phrase of better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all. So the fact that we feel that loss means that we feel love. And the same goes with the rejoicing with the birth. The fact that we feel that joy, it's that we love life and we love this new life and we love the mother who was given birth. Now, like I said, it's much easier to engage and celebrate in this kind of emotion, right? We don't necessarily celebrate loss and the regret and the grief. But our practice is to embrace every moment. Embrace it as precious, whatever it is that we're feeling, whatever emotion we're feeling. And by sharing it, we're acknowledging it. And we're, extending a hand to someone else who has felt that. The 10,000 things are the 10,000 joys, the 10,000 sorrows. And when we share it, then we no longer have fear associated with it. It's hard to imagine that we could be fearful of feeling joy, but we can be because we're afraid that it's fleeting and it won't stay. So we prefer not to acknowledge it even. We withhold part of it. We don't do it fully. We don't wholeheartedly experience it. Same with regret, loss, grief. We don't really go into it. So my daughter then told me today that she spoke with her grandmother, who was 90 years old, and was very dependent on her husband, her the grandfather, because she's kind of not so stable. And but she was very clear when she was talking to my daughter. And she said, "Well, yes, well, yeah, okay, now I will just get on to it and get on with it, and I will have to, be more in charge of what my life and everything." I think this is kind of denial, I think because this is only 24 hours after her husband of 70 years has died, maybe it's her way of protecting, of not fully feeling the grief and the loss and the pain and what that represents. It sounds to me like a bit of putting on a good face to tell herself that it's okay. It maybe there's some fear around feeling fully that loss and giving herself over to it completely. I don't mean to judge, but I just my daughter agrees too that there, tomorrow it may be different. So the Buddha had this great teaching around this, of the woman, Gotami, who has a small boy who dies, a baby. Well, he can walk. He's just learned to walk, and he trips and falls and dies. She, however, doesn't want to acknowledge that he's dead, picks him up and starts asking people around to help, but they can see he's dead and there's nothing they can do. And she gets desperate and she goes around and asks everyone she can think of for help. Finally, someone, a wise elder, said, go see the Buddha. There's this guy who's he's a great doctor. Go see the Buddha. So she goes to see the Buddha with her dead baby in her arms, saying, please give me some medicine to save my baby. And he said, okay, I see the situation. I have some medicine for you. But I need for it mustard seeds. Very common spice. It would be like saying, go to some, I need salt. So at India in that time. And so he said, go get me some mustard seeds from a house and into the village. And so she said, okay, yeah, I can do that, no problem. And he said, but as she's going away, he said, but it has to come, the mustard seeds have to come from a house where no one has died or they have experienced no loss of death of a loved one. She said, okay, fine, no problem. She's just so happy to have somebody say, yes, I can do something for you and mustard seed, no problem. So she goes to the first house, knocks on the door, and she asks them if they have mustard seeds. And they say, yes, absolutely. And they give her the mustard seeds. And she turns to walk away. And then suddenly she remembers the second part. She's so enthusiastic that she forgets. So then she remembers the second part and she said, ah, but yeah, has anyone died in this house? Have you experienced any loss of a loved one? And they said, oh, yeah, our grandfather died last week. Okay, so she had to give the mustard seed back. Fine. She goes on to another house. And of course, each house, it's the same story. And it gets to the point where she doesn't even ask for mustard seeds anymore. She knocks on the door and says, has anyone here died? Or have you lost a loved one? Everybody has a story. And little by little, she starts her denial and her feeling of the pain that she had added, the suffering that she had added onto the pain of loss is not there anymore. And she realizes she's not alone in this emotion. Like, I realized I was not alone, was sharing with my comrade poets. And she goes back to the Buddha and tells him what happened. And that, oh, before she goes back to the Buddha, she decides to go bury her baby. She fully acknowledges his death. She wants to give him a proper burial. She buries him. She's still feeling the pain of loss, but it's not what it was before. Goes back to the Buddha. He acknowledges her experience. She then decides to stay in his community, and it's happily ever after, right? But this is what we call the parable of Gotami and the mustard seed, because it's the story of our lives. However attached we are to life, death is coming for us, to everybody. Whether it's someone else's death close to us or whether it's our own death. And no matter how much we resist life, birth is coming to us. Somebody's going to be born. Whether it's someone in your sangha who has a baby, whether it's someone in your family, whether it's a neighbor, there's birth. There is death. There is birth. We can resist them all we want, but they happen. And they happen within us too. We know, biologically our cells die and are reborn. So what do we do? Well, we can save ourselves from, countless years of suffering and grasping and resisting and all the pain that comes with that by living each moment wholeheartedly. You know, it's like we always say, we can cultivate, we can sow the seeds of suffering in every moment, or we can sow the seeds of our whole life, living our life fully, this moment, not grasping, not hanging on, not pushing away, fully feeling what we feel, acknowledging it. So I fully felt that it was a strange day yesterday because of that, of this first death and then the second death. And it was almost like the second death changed the way I experienced the first death. Oh, this happens all the time, you know? I also had time, it was in space of like 5 or 6 hours between the new two bits of news, and I had experienced my young, you know, burgeoning grandson, who is like so full of energy, you become worn out. And the fact of sharing. So me reaching out and sharing with people, and then having someone reach out and share with me. It was really a powerful day. And then to wake up this morning and have this beautiful birth is just like incredible. And the outpouring of joy, that of the shared joy. That's what mudita is. You know, it's one of the great perfections, one of the paramitas, mudita, shared joy. If we are hanging on to our, you know, our joy, if we're hanging on to our grief, we're isolated. We're really shutting out the world. So sometimes we think, oh, okay, it's easy to share my grief, get it off my chest, share it with somebody else. But my joy, no, I don't want anybody else to have it. Or when I see somebody else having it, I'm jealous because I want it. That's the dark side. That's the unenlightened version of mudita, is jealousy. Not wanting to celebrate someone else's joy because I feel like I don't have it. But the thing is, if we truly share the other person's joy, we have the joy too. None of us gave birth to Finn yesterday, but yet we share that joy. We feel it. It's so joyous, you know. For those of you who, so I don't think I know Marek is not, we have a WhatsApp Sangha group, and someone from the Sangha gave birth yesterday to a baby boy whose name is Finn. So, you know, shared joy, it makes it ours. Shared grief, it makes it ours as well. And it's truly liberating. And our practice is that, you know, to embrace every moment as precious. You know, I was saying 10,000 joys, 10,000 sorrows. Isn't there, there's like a song from the 60s, Land of 10,000 something. Does anybody know that song? Oh, you do. If you heard it, you would say, oh, I didn't know that was the name of the song. Land of 10,000 something, I don't know, whatever. That's our practice. And it really, you know, it's every moment. So every moment I vow to free all the beings. Well, all the beings are in me. All the beings are me. Every aspect of me. And wow, what a liberation to free it. And it also, you know, so I reached out to these fellow poets and some who I haven't seen for ages. And already, you know, when I've said, oh, yeah, let's get together. And so people, so I'm reaching out and sharing this loss is bringing us together again, you know, in the most strangest way. I wouldn't have reached out to them otherwise, which again could be cause of regret. But now I did it. So we'll see. It feels different. The energy changes around it. It shifts the energy of the experience. Experience isn't different, but the energy of it is different. And in a sense, the experience is different because the energy is different. If we were doing a circle, I would say I would dedicate this to my dear mentor Alice and to our dear new baby Finn, to both. And to all of us who are experiencing and sharing the joy and the grief and the loss. So I'll stop now, and anyone can share because we've all experienced all of this. So I'm sure you could say something about it.
Were you thinking about the song by Elvis Presley?
Maybe. What is it? What's the title?
The title was "I Was Born About 10,000 Years Ago."
No, I don't
Yeah.
think so. It was actually in a film with Fabrice Luchini. I can't remember what it was called, where he does this really weird dance with it. Oh, whatever. I don't know. Anyway.
Hello. Thanks for this great sharing. And it's exactly it's weird because that's the when I checked my phone this morning, I had a girlfriend, an old girlfriend, whose dad was sick and who died last night or this morning. So at the same time, I had this news about her dad, whom I know from not that well, but from when we were young. And at the same time, Joanna's Finn was born. So simultaneously, life and death are of extreme importance. And it's funny because so this girlfriend was, well, anyway, no, I don't want to go into it. But so yeah, that's it. Just sharing how at one precise moment both are. Thank you.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you, Oshi, as well. I just wanted to check with you. Are you sure about the end of the story of what's her name with the mustard seeds? Because you said she joined the Buddhist community and lived happily ever after. Is that really how it goes?
I mean, she has this, deep experience. She becomes a nun, and then, like some number of years later, she has another really powerful experience, and the Buddha recognizes her as one of the most evolved and realized members of the Sangha. That's why I said happily ever after.
Okay. Sounds okay. Now it sounds a little less Disney-like. Just joking. Yeah, this is very all very evocative. I've just been spending time with my neighbor who has just now realized. I mean, who's realized in. I mean, become aware of his imminent death. I mean, so it's gonna happen in the. I mean, it could be a year. It could be more, actually. But he's somehow something has shifted in his mind, and he's realized that it could actually be in a couple of days or in a couple of weeks. And this is a seems like quite an experience for him, and it's also quite an experience to be with him, I suppose. So I suppose no one can, no one can give any mustard seeds because it's everywhere. And yes, as you were saying, Joanna's baby, all sorts of babies here all over the place. So, so I mean, I work in a farm where there's millions, hundreds of babies coming, especially in this season. They're not human but once, but a lot of babies growing, and that we're planting all of them, replanting all of them too. So it's a lot of yeah. I mean, this is what it is, I suppose. Voilà. So thank you for sharing, yeah, thank you all.
Yes, when I mentioned the, free all beings, I'm including the plants and the animals in that, that can we acknowledge them as well and share their growth and degeneration, because they do, they die, the plants. We take their fruit and their flowers, and can we acknowledge that? And how we feel about that.
Is the name of the song Land of 10,000 Dances?
Yes, I think it's Wilson Pickett now, isn't it? Yeah. That's it. Thank you. Do you know that song, or you just looked it up? Yeah.
No, I just looked it up
Okay.
a couple of minutes ago.
So for some weird reason, when I hear the 10,000 things, I often think of the Land of 10,000 Dances.
Oh,
Martin.
hello. I would like to share that what struck me more from the Dhamma talk today was really like the idea of birth being so closely related to death, and like seeing birth as not so good, because if death is like suffering and then I'm being born, then that means I'm gonna die. So it's like, and yeah, it was just a bit of a mind shift I felt, from like, okay, there is a joy from being born, but maybe like not that big, or not like, like related to the fact that I'm also going to die. So, like, more equanimous, I guess. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And that's exactly, like when I said joy, sometimes we refrain from joy because it's fleeting. It's the same thing. We could like withhold ourselves from fully living because we're afraid we're going to die, instead of which actually the opposite is the best way to live, is to live it fully this moment because, you don't know how long it's going to be here. This is the last moment, in fact, so live it completely. And then there'll be another moment. And when it's, when you literally take your last breath, we don't know what happens. It's then we enter some other space. But while we're here, that's, it's precious every moment, whatever it is we're experiencing.
I think I told you a few months ago I did a course with a Dutch Dharma teacher, Irene Bakker. She's part of also the peacemakers in Holland. And the theme of this course was living with death. And there were guided meditations, and there were kind of exercises she asked us to do. She asked us to write on a certain theme, like, I'm sure I am going to die. And I remember sitting in the sun. It was February, but it was just a little bit warm, and I was writing about realizing that my life is going to end at one moment. And suddenly, I realized that my life might stop, but life in general won't. Everything is going on. The birds and the trees and the people, and it was such a liberating experience. And I felt a great joy and a kind of liberation. Like, okay, I'm going to die. So what, almost? And it was really, yeah, it was a very beautiful moment. I spent some time with Adrien's neighbor yesterday. He's a common friend of us. And today I spent some time with a friend who is going to have a baby in the next week, something. And I had the same feeling of being in presence to the beginning and the end of life, of the joy and the fear and the grief and the anger, also about what is the new life that is coming, going to bring, and how can I say goodbye to my own life? It's too extremes. So, thank you for sharing this with us, Amy. And the reflex to share is something I recognize very strongly too. When somebody dies or there is something very joyful that happens, I always have that need. I realize that, wow. To whom can I tell this? With whom can I share this? It's really very strong. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
This seems very much to be the theme of these last couple of days. Because I was very struck this morning by the fact that the minute I got Joanna's news, I wanted to dedicate are sitting this morning to Joanna and her partner and Finn. And Lisa was there dedicating our practice to her friend and her friend's father who had just died. So it's been in the air for the last 48 hours in any case. And then the day goes on and all these different emotions. And I was coming home because the possibility, the capacity to be able to share experiences is really something that, to me, it makes life so much more alive. I was going to say easier, not necessarily, but it brings life to life. I was on the bus on the way home. I saw this extremely troubling scene. There was an older gypsy woman with an 8, 9-year-old child. And she was training the little girl to beg on the bus. It was really kind of shocked me. It wasn't as if the little girl had decided to beg and the mother then. Well, I'm not sure. I don't think it was her mother. It was just she looked older, but who knows? Aunt, grandmother was kind of encouraging her through this experience, you know, go here, go there. And I was really taken aback. I had a very pleasant afternoon with a friend, and all of a sudden this scene in my face, and I tried my there out here. A lot of people talk to everybody on the bus. We have all kinds of conversations and debates and everything on the depending on what's going on around us. So I thought, well, I'll try my luck because I don't want to hold this in my heart right now. It's really, really paining me. So I sort of mentioned to the woman sitting next to me that I was finding this very painful, and she was too. And apparently, I didn't catch where she was either doing volunteer work or she worked, but she had some contact with gypsy families and was saying that they had kind of come up to the limits of what could be done. So we just kind of mourned the situation together. But afterwards, I thanked her for engaging in the conversation. Really, it relieved my heart to a certain extent to not just sit there and watch this and then have to take it home. So I hear what you're saying about being able to, and joy, of course, is the same, and also the feeling, especially as I've lost a lot of people in the last couple of years, this feeling when I hug my friend of, ooh, ooh, don't leave me, but you're gonna leave me. That's where I'm gonna leave you. Somebody's gonna leave somebody. That very intense. I don't really have a word for it. It's a hold on, let go, kind of anxiety, joy. But so thank you, Mercy, for this invitation to discuss this.
Well, and I just might add that I was not present this morning when they were sitting, so I had no idea that that had been the subject of the dedications this morning, which just further proves the point that everyone experiences this, you know? And if we look around, it's every moment.
Last week, I have mentioned to you that we plan with another group to do a meeting about Masumi Roshi, which is 30th anniversary of his passing away, and it actually will going to be this Sunday. But it doesn't. If anybody of you would like to attend, it will be like 6 p.m. Paris time or 5 p.m. Lisbon time, and this was, you know, mo motivated by very similar feelings of what of except that 30 years delayed, so to speak. So the realization that we will not meet him again, and what can we do? That it was only so little that we took from him. But what I wanted to say is, since you experience similar themes, but related to other people, like the passing away of Roshi Semi, mentor, or the death of somebody else. So if you decide to attend, it doesn't have to be about Masumi Roshi. It could be as well about death of somebody important, or anything that really that you would like to share. Also, if some of you would be interested in him, but haven't met him or haven't heard of him yet, there is a good, I think, good documentary about 1 hour long about his life, done by a Dutch sangha a few years ago, and I sincerely encourage anybody of you who is interested to see this movie. It could call also be an inspiration for our talk. I've put all links into the chat box. I don't know if you can see it and whether you can copy it. If you have the time and wish to attend, all you need to do is to click the link, the Zoom link, and you will be connected on Sunday. And I have also added the emails to the hostess, the Anna Zumwalt, and myself. But you don't need to. It's just in case that you have some concerns or difficulties to connect. And I'm also glad I could be together with you in this important on this important day, and thank you all for sharing.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you very much.
It makes me remember last week when we were in Sachin in the Netherlands, and this was the Sachin for transmission of Jeroen. So this was in a way also kind of celebrating the way of birth. And the same week we had, and thank you, Marek, for making me remember, we had a service for Maizumi Roshi, who died 30 years ago. And it was really, it was a strong presence, really, of Maizumi Roshi over there. So, yeah, it's a theme which is alive. And I was privileged to share that news of Jeroen's transmission in the Sangha for 3 times. So I was very happy to share that and now share for the 4th time. Yeah.
Thank you. And that's such a joy to share that news, huh? That's really wonderful.
Okay, well, I'll share another experience then, or thoughts. I know it's an experience and thoughts. So interestingly, after I was with my neighbor, I went to the market and ended up in a sort of conversation about politics, and it was very odd because I just heard an interview of some guy who's running for president here in 2027, and I thought it was very interesting, so I brought it up, and somehow one person who was there in the conversation sort of turned the whole situation around, and suddenly the conversation became that tens of thousands of people are dying in Gaza and no one gives a damn, and probably this candidate, I mean, it was connected to the conversation about this other guy, but anyway, so suddenly I just made the connection with this and somehow I also felt I don't know, there are several things there, but I sort of felt attacked by this guy's sort of violent reaction. But in fact, looked like he was in distress. He was talking about a situation that is very distressful, Anyway, and something that just crossed my mind now was that because we're talking about the sharing, the sharing of these joys of a birth or the sharing of the, what happens, good news, bad news, end of life, beginning of life. There was something, I'm not sure where I'm going with this, but there was something also of that nature just in my experience of that scene as well. So yes, of course, we were talking about something that has to do with that is, I mean, a situation amongst many other situations, but one of the most, well, one of the very, I mean, an awful and very, with a lot of media coverage situation, which is this Gaza horrific situation. But what I'm getting at was also that there was some difficult place there where we were trying to share something in that moment as well. And I was trying to share hope, I suppose, because this guy's message, I'm not going to enter into. If some are interested, I can tell you whose interview I was listening to. But anyway, I felt hope. Although looking at a number of aspects of the world and the developments in the world and the climate and you name it, it's sometimes a bit complicated to feel hopeful, or at least that's my experience. And yet, and he was sharing in return a sort of absence of hope, like despair. And I know this guy, so I also know it's a mix of how he feels. So he was, and there was this. So I don't know. Yeah, this just I just realized this, that in fact we were, but somehow our communications clashed. So I was in a sort of hey. And he sort of met this with his despair, let's say, or his own yeah, I don't know. Anyway, it just also made me feel I'm happy I could be here with you after this because it did sort of shake me. So there it is. I don't know. And the conversation slided immediately. He was like, "Yeah, I tried it. The usual." So I was like, "Yeah, but okay. So it's true that there's this happening. There's a lot of other things happening. We both work on this farm where we're giving birth and killing plants. And not only plants, really, a lot of animals, I mean, animals as in bugs, mostly in our case. And it's just, I just found it very difficult in that moment to, it felt like he was so polarized by this situation or caught by this specific situation. I was like, okay, what can I even say? Does it even make sense to try and put this in perspective? What perspective is there anyway? Because what he's referring to is super. Don't even know what words to use, but it's horrific. And yet there are so many, I was a bit At least what is clear is that his distress was communicated to me for sure. And I felt distressed after that. So, yeah, that's again another angle to all of this. So, anyway, thank you for listening. I didn't mean to use you all as my therapy group, but thank you. And yeah, if anyone has to comment about it, I would be grateful. Thank you. Although maybe time is running out.
Yeah, time is nearly up. This is an example of how, there can tend to be not much generosity with our feelings, and so one, we can only hold one. And so, if there's joy, well, there can't be distress too. Or if there's enthusiasm, there can't be outrage, and actually they all have their place. And something can be completely outrageous and horrific, and something else can be really encouraging and beautiful. One doesn't take away from the other, although it's really hard to hold that. So maybe sometimes if someone, is having difficulty holding that, then we let go of our, we acknowledge their thing and don't insist on our own. I don't know. It's just it's a challenge though, it is, because that's how we think. And I come back to this thing that in today's world, the most radical speech is nuanced speech, because nobody is nuanced these days. Actually, and this comes right back down to the middle way, the Buddha's middle way. It's nuanced. It's always been the most radical way, but in our extremely polarized world, it's even more radical nuance. We're out of time. Sorry. Thank you all. Beautiful sharing. Lovely to be with you tonight. Thank you.